Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. Recorded live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Welcome to Black Girl Missing, a podcast that covers stories of black girls who were reported missing when they were under the age of 18. We are live at the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, D.C., and this podcast is brought to you by Full Service Radio. Shout out to our producer, Alexia, in the booth. We just want to make sure that you know, due to the sensitive and sometimes graphic nature of the cases we cover, we advise you to use caution when listening. I am one of your co-hosts, Feminisa Jones. I'm here with my amazing, wonderful sister friends through it all, Asa.
Hello.
Nikki.
Hello. Good day.
All right. This is our first official podcast, and this is a serious topic, but we have fun with each other.
Yes.
So we hope that you all are joining us. How's everybody doing today?
Pretty good.
Pretty good?
Mm-hmm.
I'm magical.
You're magical. I love it. I am not as magical today, although I had something to drink, so maybe I'll get there. So for those of you that are first tuning in, you don't know anything about this show, we are really, really committed to telling the stories of black girls who go missing. We came up with this idea several months ago, and we have been developing this, and we're so happy that Full Service Radio is, you know, giving us the platform to do this. So what we'll be doing pretty much every episode is we'll have a segment where we're covering current missing girls, and we'll give you information on them. And if you know anything, you hear anything, you can, you know, reach out to the resources available. And then we will be delving into stories of girls who are either still currently missing, girls that maybe were, you know, were killed or were found dead, or girls that were returned. And we just kind of really kind of go through their stories and see what happened. So Asa, why don't you take it away?
All right, so this is our segment for girls that are currently missing and have corresponding news articles that you will be able to find on our social media networks. We encourage you to pay close attention to these sites and help us help the families who are still seeking answers and long for their loved ones' safe return. We'd like to note that we create these lists of currently missing black girls in real time, so by the time the podcast episodes are released, there may have been changes. Everything will be in our social media feeds for you to be able to follow closer along. So our first two girls are Naisha Dow and Jocelyn Lentino. They are two of three 16-year-old girls from Long Island, New York, missing from the Timothy Hill Children's Ranch in Riverhead since Tuesday, February 18th at 9:40 p.m., and were last seen getting into a white BMW in the vicinity of Sound Avenue and Osborne Avenue, according to the police press release. One girl has already been safely found and is back in the care of the group home, but Naisha and Jocelyn are still missing. Naisha is described as black, 5'6" tall, with black hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a black and white long sleeve shirt, blue jeans, and sneakers that are black, white, and green. Jocelyn is described as Hispanic, 5'4" tall, with blonde curly hair and blue eyes. She was last seen wearing a pink hoodie and light blue jeans. If you have information on the location of these girls, please call Riverhead Police Department at 631-727-4500. Our next two girls are Nigeria Lincoln, 16 years old, and Mordasia Green, 15 years old. They are both missing from a group home in Pequia Township, Pennsylvania. They were both last seen leaving the group home on January 19th at 7:22 p.m. and are thought to be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Nigeria is described as approximately 5'8", 180 pounds, with brown eyes and black hair. She was last seen wearing black jeans, a gray head wrap, and gray sneakers. Mordasia is described as approximately 5'4", 145 pounds, with brown eyes and black hair. She was last seen wearing gray sweatpants, a tan jacket, and tan boots. If you have information on the location of these girls, please call Pennsylvania State Police Lancaster at 717-299-7650. Our next girl is Angel Montgomery. She's a 16-year-old girl from Detroit, Michigan, who was last seen about 6 p.m. on Wednesday, February 19th, in the 8600 block of Whitcomb. She is described as black with long straight black hair and blonde highlights. She's 5'6" tall and weighs 120 pounds. She was last seen wearing a black jacket, black pants, a red shirt, red and black Jordan gym shoes, and a gray and yellow Mickey Mouse baseball hat. If you have any information on the location of her, please call Detroit Police Department's 2nd Precinct Investigative Unit at 313-596-5240. Our last girl that we are covering this week is Ashanti Blackwell. She's a 17-year-old girl missing from Florence, South Carolina. She was last seen Thursday, February 20th, at her home on West Kirby Street. She's described as 5'2" tall, weighing 240 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a pair of gray leggings and black jacket with a white pullover. If you have any information on the location of her, please call FCSO investigators at 843-665-2121, extension 468.
Thank you so much. We hope that we can continue to amplify these stories of girls that are currently missing, because we know that the media does not pay enough attention when black girls go missing. This week's case, oh my goodness, it's just so much. It's so much. Ralia Wilson, and some of you may remember this case. This case is almost 20 years old now. This one, I remember feeling that this girl was failed just across the board. She was just, I mean, there's so many failures that happen that we wanted to start with this case to really show how a lot of this happens. There's institutional failures, there's familial failures, there's community failures. There's so much that goes into it. And this poor girl suffered unnecessarily. And to this day, we still have no clear idea of what happened, because her body was never recovered. She's never been seen. So for those of you who are totally unfamiliar with Ralia Wilson, in January 18th, 2001, that's the date that we know she went missing. That's the last reported date that she was alive and seen alive. She was 4 years old. She's still technically missing because there's never been a body recovered. We're going to tell you how she went missing and all the details. But also I want to focus on the fact that her case created the Ralia Alert System in the state of Florida and led to the Ralia Wilson Act, which was designed to protect children that are in the protective services of the state. The Ralia Alert System was created in response to the disappearance of Ralia Wilson. She was in the foster care system, the Department of Children and Families foster care system. It was created by an organization called Peas in Their Pods, which was a nonprofit organization that was founded in 2007. The Ralia Wilson Act, those requirements are that protective services children must be enrolled to participate 5 days a week in some kind of child care. They may not be withdrawn without prior written approval. The protective services child has 7 consecutive excused or unexcused absences. The child care provider must notify the appropriate community-based care staff. The department and child providers must follow local protocols. And then if there's, if it's not in the best interest of the child to remain in child care or early education programs, the caregiver must work with a case manager, guardian, or child care and educational staff to determine the best setting for the child. Once you hear this story, you'll understand why this act was proposed and why the RELIA alert system should be adopted in every single state. So let's go back. On January 18th, 2001, an unidentified African-American female allegedly arrived at RELIA's so-called godmother's home. There was a claim that she came and was representing the Department of Child Services and that she was going to be taking RELIA for an examination. RELIA had had a history of so-called behavioral issues, and she was struggling. This all turns out to be fake. There was no such woman, and this was an elaborate cover-up. RELIA and her sisters were born to a mother who was addicted to cocaine, crack cocaine. That's not a judgment on her. It's just part of the situation. Her mother's name was Gloria. She was neglectful of her children. She eventually terminated her rights because she struggled with, you know, taking care of them, and she admitted that. The Department of Child and Family Services, they were aware of issues since 1996 when she had her older daughter. A neighbor was concerned that there was neglect happening with Ms. Wilson and her children. After RELIA was born, she ended up relocating to Cleveland, and she said that she notified them about her plans, her rights were terminated, and custody was granted to a woman named Pamela Graham. Pamela Graham, and this is a little sketchy back then, but you know, there was a lot of confusion about the connections between her. According to Gloria Wilson, she met Pamela because she was in a substance abuse program with one of her daughters. And she kind of built this kind of motherly connection or sisterly connection with her. And she eventually said that she wanted her to take care of her daughters. And her daughters would be RELIA and Rodrika, her younger child. Pamela agrees to take in the children. She's granted custody, you know, through the state. She has the children. Unfortunately, she lives with a woman named Geraldine Graham. Now, I want you to remember the difference, because Geraldine is the woman that we're going to be talking about who has been responsible for the majority of the things that went wrong in this situation. It's a little confusing. Some reports say that they were lovers and partners. Some say domestic partners. Some say friends. In her later testimony, Pamela said that Geraldine was her lover, her partner, and was abusive towards her. So that's what we're going to go with. These were lovers who were living together. There was about an 18-year age difference between them. So we do have some context. So while Pamela is getting the custody, Geraldine is also in the house. At first, everything was fine. RELIA and her younger sister are there. Young children, they're being showered with love. But eventually, Geraldine becomes convinced that RELIA is possessed by the devil. Now, I just want that to settle in with folks. She believes that this baby is possessed with the devil. So what does she do? She starts tying her up at night, restraining her with like those police twisty tie things.
It's just awful.
It's just, she has her there for as long as 12 hours. She puts her in a dog cage so she can't get out. One time she wet the bed and she allegedly threw her in a bathtub of hot scalding water because she wet the bed. There were several reports of abuse that Geraldine committed against RELIA. And what really kind of gets us about this story is that after the fact, mm-hmm. so many people are like, yeah, she did this. You know, she was abusive to her. Even her own son, Geraldine's son, Kenneth, testifies that he knew this girl was being abused.
And nobody said anything.
We're going to hear that a lot, I think, through these stories, mm-hmm. that nobody did anything. Why? We have a culture of abuse and corporal punishment that we seem to think is okay.
Yep.
And as a community, we tend to turn the other cheek. So getting back to this, we're just going to assume that they're both caregivers. Pamela is the younger of the two. She's the one that has the legal custody. But Geraldine is the one who kind of takes over things. Geraldine handles all of the the stuff related to the payments and the checks, because, you know, you get money when you foster children. So she's the one handling all of that. She's the one, you know, claiming that she's doing the toy shopping and the clothes shopping and things. So she does all of that, right? Now, Geraldine's son, there was, again, these details have been kind of confusing, but her son, Kenneth, was thought to possibly be Relia's father. Thing is that, you know, according to Geraldine, Relia's mom, Gloria, said that there were a number of men that could have been the father and that she wasn't sure. This whole idea of Kenneth possibly being the father, honestly, I don't believe anything about it. I think she just said that as a justification for why she was more involved in Relia's life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's more like what it sounded like. There was a man named Cash who claims that that was his daughter, that he had seen her at least three times, spent time with her. He ended up becoming incarcerated. But he said before he was incarcerated, he took Relia and gave Relia to his aunt to take care of.
Right.
His aunt was also neglectful. I mean, this little girl, it didn't matter where she went.
Yeah.
People were just being neglectful and abusive. So she was actually removed from that home.
There's so many facets.
There's so many things that are going on. Okay. So when she went missing, it was Geraldine, according to Geraldine, the woman who believes this child was possessed by the devil, she says that a woman came. She had an African accent, is what she said. She came to her door, told her that they were going to be taking Relia because they had to do an evaluation. And she said that she was so familiar with the case that she just believed her. And she gave her to Relia. I mean, gave Relia to this woman. Yeah. Okay. I guess as a social worker, there's so many things that just went wrong with this story.
Yeah.
Well, she's some African woman. I don't know her name. She was just an African woman, and she came and took her and said that there was an evaluation. So you don't write down a name. You don't get any credentials. You don't get anything. You just trust that this woman is here.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But right. Say nothing.
And say nothing.
Relia does not come back.
When Relia does not come back.
And there's no word about where she is.
There's no word about what she is. But here's the thing. Geraldine claims that after the woman took, she called DCF a number of times to find out when Relia was coming back. DCF has no record of these calls. But they can't be trusted.
Right.
Because they're DCF.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm giving you all this context so that you understand that when I say January of 2001, I want to point out the fact the girl was not reported missing until April of 2002. What happened in those 15 months that this girl was missing and was not officially noted as missing? There's a few things that happened. One, Pamela and Geraldine kept collecting those checks.
And kept cashing them.
Oh, yeah. Pretending that this girl was still there.
Mm-hmm.
Geraldine even went so far to say that she had taken her to some doctor's appointments for Roderica's doctor, the younger daughter. Took her for doctor's checkups to get vaccines and things.
Right.
Doctor said she's never been here. Never seen her. She says that she called DCF and was told that it would be too much administrative complications to return the checks that she had already cashed, so that she was told to just keep them.
Which I don't know. Is a lie.
We know that's some bull. Because every state wants their money back.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking thousands of dollars.
They want every dime.
They want every dime back. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's no way that a state agency or somebody who's acting on behalf of the state is going to say, oh, just keep the checks.
We don't want to go through the paperwork
of getting the money back. That's nonsense. Okay, I set up this side so you all understand that this little girl had been bounced around to different people who were supposed to care for her. None of them were taking care of her. Her mom, at least, was able to admit and say, I'm too addicted. Mm-hmm. I can't take care of my kids. I want to give them to somebody that I trust. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of condemnation about her mom in the media. I remember
right.
this. But I'm kind of the mind of, this woman was able to say, I can't take care of my kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so with her oldest daughter, who was only 6 when Relia went missing and doesn't remember her, she gave her to her pastor and her pastor's wife at a church that she went to. Mm-hmm. They would look out for her, and then one weekend she was just like, keep her, please, I can't do this. And they did, and they ended up adopting her or whatever.
Right.
they ended up having the same case manager that was working with Ralia. And they said that they had a difficult time communicating with her. But anyway, her oldest daughter was adopted. She was good. She doesn't remember much. Her name was Brandy. She doesn't remember much. The mom also gave her youngest two daughters to this woman named Pamela that she trusted, she felt comfortable with. And the woman agreed. So she had somewhere. She didn't leave them in the street. Mm-hmm. She didn't, you know, she hadn't put them somewhere. It just so happens that she put them in a house with this abusive, terrorizing woman. Okay? So let's go to the administrative side of things. Now, I'm a social worker. One of the reasons I didn't work in child welfare is because it would take everything in me to not go to somebody's house, and when I see the kid in a cage, to not kill everybody. Mm-hmm. That's just my instinct. Yeah. I'm a mom. I'm just kind of like, but aside from that, I'm a black woman, and I just feel certain ways about our children. So it'd be hard for me to see somebody being neglected and not chop them in the throat.
Right.
So I worked with adults, but I also worked with adults that were psychiatrically disabled and people with a lot of addiction issues. Same process of documentation, creating files, following up. You have protocol.
Yeah, every time.
Every time you have protocol. And so what really struck me about this case is how they went 15 months mm-hmm. without a single note, single visit, mm-hmm. a single call, nothing.
Can I even stick a nugget in there? Mm-hmm. Anytime that you work with any type of social services organization that the government has their hands in, they want you to document anytime you do anything. Anytime you talk to a consumer, anytime mm-hmm. you talk to a client, anytime you speak to somebody, they want you to document that.
Because an audit will come.
And even when you make a phone call, mm-hmm. you're supposed to put in the case notes, I made a phone call, attempted to reach today, nobody answered the call.
At this time, mm-hmm. on yep. this day.
On mm-hmm. this day. That's bottom line, mm-hmm. right? None of this happened for 15 months. What did they say was the reason? They're too overwhelmed with cases. Is that a possibility? Absolutely. We know that in social services, these social service workers are overwhelmed, sometimes having 100, 150 cases. We know systemically this is a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's not unfathomable that a child can fall through the cracks.
Absolutely.
Right.
It just so happens that when they do, it's the worst cases.
Yes.
It's the worst ones. And that's what really bothered me. I mean, 15 months, not even a 6-month check-in, not even an annual review of the case.
Nothing.
Nothing. So what ends up happening is a new service person is assigned to this case. They go and they check and they're like, I'm here to visit Ralia. And the woman, Geraldine's like, Ralia's not here anymore. Just kind of like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, last year this woman came, this African woman came and said she was from DCF and she took her. She's not here. And they're like, no, we don't have anybody that fits that description. We don't have any of that information. Where is this girl? So that's when she was officially reported missing. It was April of 2002.
Almost a year and a half later.
Almost a year and a half later. So then they got to start digging. Okay. So now we have to get to Deborah Muskelly. Deborah Muskelly is at the center of this because she was assigned this family's cases, their situation. It was her responsibility to work with the older sister, Brandy, Ralia, and Rodrika. She failed all of those people. They pretty much had to do everything themselves. She was supposed to check in with Ralia because Ralia was said to have behavioral issues. I believe she was going to childcare and there were some issues and they may have suspected abuse, and that's why Geraldine kind of pulled her back, which is why in the Ralia Wilson Act, it's like if the child is in childcare right. sponsored by the mm-hmm. state, there needs to be a reason and written proof of why you're taking the child out.
Right.
So there were signs of trouble. There were things like that. Again, she's going to childcare. This child, there's signs of trouble. Nobody says anything. Got it. She doesn't visit. Deborah Muskelly is supposed to come. She's supposed to at least call a couple of times a month. She's supposed to visit. She doesn't do any of this. She blames being overwhelmed. She blames everybody but herself. Yeah. Come to find out, this woman has had many issues with working with other cases. She has had all these issues going on, and she's just not a competent worker. Mm-hmm. If we go back to Geraldine, she was also a scammer. Come to find out, this woman got over 40 aliases. Mm-hmm. She has been committing all kinds of government fraud. She made all these fraudulent lawsuits, mm-hmm. racial discrimination, accidents, all these things, personal injury suits. She had a food stamp fraud case in Tennessee. I mean, this woman has been a long time hustler. And I guess she saw an opportunity when her so-called partner, because we're not 100% sure, right. but when her partner gets this child, she sees it as a chance to get money.
Absolutely.
So she's not calling DCF. She's not checking. She's not even making attempts. But DCF is also not making attempts. Mm-hmm. So we have this situation now where these two children are in this care and nobody's checking up on them. Let's see. They said they have no record of any phone calls. They said that Muskelly was. Oh, so Geraldine says that Muskelly was aware that Ralia was gone. That she knew this, and that she was helping her cover up. This, remember when I said earlier, yeah. she told her to keep cash in the checks?
Yeah.
That's what Geraldine is saying. She's saying, well, no, I worked with Miss Muskelly. She told me to keep cash in the checks, that everything mm-hmm. was fine, that they were placing her in some other place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Muskelly's like, I never told her that. But there's no documentation. So she can't even prove that herself. That's the other reason why you document.
Right.
To cover your own self.
Right.
You know, so she has no records at all. So anything that this woman, Geraldine, is saying could be true.
Could be a lie.
Who's to say? And as I said before, the minister and his wife that had adopted Brandy, they were also trying to have contact with Muskelly because they wanted to do the adoption process, mm-hmm. and Muskelly was hard to get in touch with. So they went another route, and luckily they were able to do that. But this woman obviously has been a problem. I also want to state that Deborah Muskelly is black. She is a black woman, and it really bothered me because part of why so many of us get into social services is because we have seen the history of racism and discrimination against mm-hmm. our own people.
Right.
And when you fall into this and you become part of the problem, mm-hmm. that really bothers me.
Yes.
Like, it makes it even worse. Like, why are you even here?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it be your own people.
It really be your own people.
Okay. So here's what we know. After they started this investigation, it's going on. So April 2002, they finally realized she's missing. Her younger sister, Rodrika, was still there. They found her to be neglected. Mm-hmm. So they removed her. The judge said that Rodrika had suffered developmental problems and an untreated eye condition. So they weren't even taking her to the doctor.
No.
None of these kids were getting care. They focused on Geraldine, as well as, remember when I mentioned the guy Cash, his aunt?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, Paula Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking at both of them, trying to figure out if they were scamming together. Because they both neglected this girl, but they seemed to know each other. They seemed to be in contact.
Mm-hmm.
So the investigation is kind of probing into, well, if you were supposed to have her, if Pamela Graham was supposed to have her, how did she end up in Kendrick's house?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How did she end up being able to claim custody?
Right.
Where did DCF mess that up? Only one person could claim custody of this child.
Right.
So how is DCF going into this woman Kendrick's house, mm-hmm. Paula Kendrick's house, and removing this child if she don't have custody? So we've got a case where this girl has two. I mean, I'm telling you, it is such a mess. So they focused on them. They were both charged. Again, I want to just make sure that people are clear. There is a man named Cash who claimed to be Ralia's dad. He is incarcerated. Before he was incarcerated, he saw his daughter at least 3 times. He took her to stay with his aunt. I'm going to refer to her by her last name, Kendrick. He believed that he was putting her in good care. She was removed from that home from neglect. So I just want to get these characters together. Both Geraldine Graham and Kendrick were charged with frauding the state of over $14,000. They said that they both engaged in fraud by accepting funds from the state for Ralia's care after she disappeared.
So no checks and balances.
No checks and balances at all, because there should not be two homes that are receiving benefits and checks for the same child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Had they, and as much as they focus on money, had they cross-checked, they'd have caught that there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't do that. So this woman, Kendra, she pled guilty because she is like, you know what? I'm going to take the plea. And what they she pled guilty to neglecting and abusing her, but not to harming her. I don't know how that makes sense to anyone else, but whatever. She was sentenced to 364 days in prison, followed by 5 years of probation, because she promised to testify against Geralyn Graham. So they had to know each other. They knew that stuff was happening. Yeah. She had enough details about Geralyn Graham and what she was doing to Raleah to be able to testify. That's why they were investigating them together and wondering if they were working together. She said that they both spanked her with switches, that Graham locked her in a dog cage and in the laundry room, and occasionally handcuffed her to the bed at night. There was one report where Raleah was locked in the laundry room and she opened a bottle of bleach and drank that and got sick. She also ended up burning her face on the water heater because it was too hot. She didn't know. Obviously, the girl was thirsty.
When
you think about that.
Yeah.
She was thirsty and she was looking for something to drink. She probably saw the water coming and wanted that. She saw the bleach. She didn't know liquid. She's four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they had her down there dehydrating. She testified against her, but then she goes on to say she does not know what happened to Raleah. I just know that these things happened to her, but I don't know what happened eventually. And let's see. What else happened? Also, so in just they're on trial. They're going through all these things. In March 2005, in March of in 2005, this woman was charged. Geralyn Graham, she's charged with everything. They're trying to throw their book at this woman: murder, kidnapping, abuse, neglect, all these things. Only problem is
there's nobody.
They're trying. So while she's in jail, you know, she's in jail for fraud, all these other things. You know what this woman does? Allegedly. Confesses to her cellmate that she killed Raleah because the girl had demons and was possessed by Satan. Now, this person that they, this cellmate, a Robin Lunsford, claims that she had these conversations, she got this information. But then she said she said that she gave this information in good conscience because she got this information. But you know what she ends up doing? She's like, well, I will testify if you reduce my sentence for what I'm in here. I think it was like robbery or something like that. She wanted her a robbery assault. She was supposed to be in for a long time. She's like, well, I'll testify against Geralyn and say in court that I heard her say that she committed this murder if you reduce my sentence down to 3 years, because they had offered her 20 years.
Oh, goodness.
She said she wanted three. This woman gets up on the stand and pleads the fifth.
What? Ooh.
A prison snitch, right, trying to get her time reduced. Right. They wouldn't do it. And so Geralyn's lawyer actually said, well, you know, try to discredit her. She's got a long rap sheet. She's just trying to get her sentence. She can't be believed. But a lot of times, a lot of these, you know, these things we hear about is because these knuckleheads confess to their cellmate that they did this. Also, Geralyn is not necessarily okay because she believes this four-year-old girl was possessed by the devil. So it makes sense that she might actually tell people that, right? This woman, Robin Lunsfield, she stopped cooperating. She was like, I'm going to plead the fifth or whatever. So they couldn't get this murder thing. They couldn't get this killing thing. But they were able to get everything else. Not only did Geralyn's son, her own son, testified, her own son, Kenneth. Remember, I mentioned earlier that he was thought to possibly be somebody who could be Raleah's dad. He admits and he says that, yes, my mother was abusive towards this girl. Did he do anything?
Nope.
No. During this trial, let's go back to Pamela. During the trial, Pamela Graham says that she was being abused by Geralyn and that she was being threatened. And I do believe this is a possibility.
Right.
This woman was about 18 years older than her. She said that she feared for her own life. She feared for retribution. She said that because Raleah was given to her, Pamela, she was told, Geralyn said, well, if you call the police, they're going to blame you.
Right.
Because you're the one that's responsible for her, not me. So Pamela says she never called the police because she was scared of going to jail herself. And she said, it wasn't that I didn't care about Raleah. I was just scared.
I mean, that that is a common thread in certain cases.
I mean, so, when you look at issues of abuse, yes, especially with the mothers that are being abused, right, you know, they don't know what to do. They're scared.
Right.
But, and this wasn't even her child. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different. But still.
But yeah, exactly.
There was there had to be a moment where Geraldine wasn't in the house and you could have taken her and driven her to the nearest police station.
But also there's the threat of how the relationship that black people have with
the police. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that too. And with social services.
Right.
And they've come in.
I'm not accusing her.
No, exactly. I get it.
But it's, you know, it is a factor.
Like, and then they come in and they do take our children away.
Right, right.
And when we're not doing anything.
Yeah. Right. So there's a layered situation here that has a lot to do with just politics and sociopolitical stuff that we're just need to be taken into account as well.
Mm-hmm. There's so much going on. And so eventually, and I don't want to belabor this point, but because, you know, I want to talk about some other things, but basically you have this case where this girl was just failed from day one, and I think the person who showed the most effort was actually her mom, who was addicted to drugs and put her into the system, and from there she was shuffled around to people that were abusive. They were frauding the state, they were taking money, they were engaged in all kind of stuff. Even before this girl was born, these were the kind of people she just had, unfortunately, ended up in the wrong hands.
Yeah. Yes.
Had the pastor and his wife been able to take the two youngest girls,
yeah,
it might have been a better, different thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was six when her sister went missing. I mean, there was a disconnect there. And sometimes they can't take everybody. You know, mm-hmm, you try to encourage, you know, foster care, they do try to encourage everybody to take all the kids, but sometimes they can't. So maybe if they had the opportunity, we'd have a different story to tell.
Yes.
Father incarcerated. Another possible. We don't know who the father is. There's no real documentation, but he's caught up in the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And these two women are just looking, I can make money off of this girl. It don't matter. But at least we know that Kendrick, when she admits to being hit by a switch, I was hit by a switch. We know mm-hmm. now that stuff is not right. But back then, it wasn't like that. You know, a lot of kids got hit by switches. She wasn't locking her in a dog cage, though.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't handcuffing her to the bed at night so that the girl mm-hmm. couldn't move. Forcing her to wet the bed and then, scalding her with boiling water because she wet mm-hmm. the bed.
Right.
And it was Pamela Kendrick, I believe, not Paula. I forgive me. She wasn't doing all of that. But she did go to jail.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She went to jail for frauding and for abuse and neglect. She went to jail for a year. What ends up happening is this woman, Geraldine Graham, mm-hmm. is sentenced to 55 years in jail. She is guilty on everything except the murder. And we're not laughing because it's, you know, it's funny. It's kind of like, damn.
It all came full circle.
It all came like 55 years. And when she was convicted, I believe she was like 66 years old. So she's going to spend the rest of her life in jail. There's no chance and stuff like that. But the bottom line is we don't know what happened to Ralia.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened to her.
She would be approximately 23
23 now. Right now. Mm-hmm. Yes, let me go over the statistics for her. Meant to give you that at the beginning. She was born September 29th, 1996. When she went missing, she was 4 years old. She was about 3 feet tall, about 40 to 50 pounds. She was missing from Miami, Florida. And she went missing on January 18th, which was the last date that anybody could confirm actually seeing her. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. There were some witnesses who said that they saw Ralia and Geraldine together, mm-hmm. but none of that was really confirmed. Because the whole thing was that Geraldine was claiming that this woman came and took her. But people were saying, well, no, I saw you a week later at the grocery store with mm-hmm. her. You know, or I saw you in the car with her. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing. So we don't know. But the last mm-hmm. official date was January 18, 2001.
Yeah.
Ralia would be, 23 going on. She'll be 24 this year.
Yep.
There's pictures of her and there's some sketches of what she might look like online. Mm-hmm. We'll put up some more of that information. But because nobody was ever recovered, mm-hmm. we don't know, because there was another speculation to this story that she was sold. Mm-hmm. There was this talk, the original Graham. I'm like all confused with these names. The partner, yeah. when she was like telling the story, she said that, you know, Geraldine had said something about a Spanish woman that was interested in adopting her or taking her, that she would take Relia to New York with her and come back. And she suspected that maybe Geraldine was trying to sell her. It's like, how do you try to sell a child that you believe is possessed with the devil?
But also, how do you know someone is possibly trying to sell a child?
And you don't say anything. And you don't do anything. So we're gonna wrap it up. But we want you all to think about these stories. And every week we're going to be back and we're going to be talking about a different case. And we hope that, you know, you've thought about this. You see all the things that go wrong. People in your own lives that you may see neglectful things. You please, please, please speak up. Please say something. Even if it's an anonymous tip. A lot of us are mandated reporters because of the work that we're in. We have to speak up. We have to come forward. Our girls need us and our girls deserve better. Nikki, tell people where they can find us, please.
Be sure to follow us on social media. Our Twitter is Black Girl Missing, BLKGIRLMISSING. Facebook is Black Girl Missing Pod, and our Instagram is Black Girl Missing Podcast. Black Girl Missing Podcast is researched, written, and produced by us. It is a labor of love by three concerned Black women who want justice for missing Black girls. Today's episode was written by Feminista Jones, and you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you, Alexia. Thank you, Full Service. And we will see you next Sunday at 1 p.m.
Absolutely. Right.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Bye. Se liga quem tá do outro lado, e aqui a chapa é...